Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Lee Paris on the show today. Lee is with Wellspring Associates.
Lee, I am so excited to have you with me today. We've just got to know you and your wife over the last several years, and I'm just excited for our listening audience to hear your story.
Well, it's an honor for me to be here with you, Lisa. I love being with you in whatever we're doing, so look forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Well, let's dive right in. I want you to talk a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I'm from Mississippi. I grew up in the Mississippi Delta. I'm 61 years old, so I grew up in the late 50s and through the 60s and 70s, and our family is a Mississippi family. I'm, I think, a sixth-generation Mississippian on both sides of my family. So our roots are really deep in our state. I grew up in a town called Indianola. It's a little small town, about 10 or 12,000, and a precious place to grow up and lots of wonderful memories and deep relationships. And 1975, graduated from high school and went to Ole Miss, where our roots are equally as deep. Our kids are fifth generation at Ole Miss. I had two great-grandparents that went to school up in Oxford starting in the 1870s. And so it's been a wonderful tradition in our family for many, many years. And
what an incredible legacy. The chapel's even named after your family,
well,
right, at Ole Miss?
Well, it's Paris Yates Chapel. The university was very gracious in naming it for two families. Our family gave the lead gift, and I was the co-chair of the committee to help build the chapel in 1999, and we raised the balance of the funds from a lot of wonderful, generous folks, and the university was very gracious in naming it for our family, and we've had three weddings there.
So cool.
My two sisters and Lisa and I have all had one daughter apiece to get married there, and hopefully there'll be many more.
Oh, that is so neat. Well, you guys are doing your part because you've got some grandkids now. And so just to make it clear, Lisa's family, I mean, it's a double legacy, right? Because Lisa's family actually went there as well. And was it your grandmother that started?
My great-grandmother was one of the three founders of Delta Gamma. You say Delta Gamma sorority, but it's actually Delta Gamma fraternity. I think when they started it in the 1870s, there was no such thing as a sorority. So the charter actually says Delta Gamma fraternity, and it was started in Oxford in the 1870s.
That is just so neat, Lee. I love that both of your families. It's just truly a legacy, you know, that you guys have built there. So I know that you guys have a common practice where you do a lot of tailgating. And, I mean, I see pictures of you guys. You hardly miss a game. What about, like, the whole big tailgating thing? And you guys have your own tent and all of that.
Again, it's very traditional. We tailgate, and we really don't tailgate. I'll get to that in a minute. We originally tailgated some of the same spots that my grandparents and my parents used to park their car in the Grove and the Circle. We have been doing that, I guess, my whole life. I don't remember a time that we weren't doing that. I think it was in the early 90s. There was some torrential rain for 2 weeks in a row, and it was so bad that the university had to rope off the Grove and the Circle where people would park and have their picnics and tailgate.
because it was going to kill all the trees. It's the Grove at Ole Miss is about, I think it's 11 acres in the middle of campus. And picture Central Park in New York, for those who have been to New York, and mm-hmm. how all the tall buildings have grown up around Central Park. Originally, the university was built around a beautiful small circle, and behind the circle, there was an 11-acre pasture where the students would park their horses and tie up their horses, goodness. And it was an area for the horses to be able to graze. And then the university just never used that space to build buildings. And so as the university grew and grew, the Grove and the Circle were protected, and it's just a beautiful green space, a park in the middle of the campus. I've got one of my close friends is the landscape architect for the university, and he's worked so hard, and the university has been named time and time again over the last few years as the most beautiful college campus in America. And a lot of that is because of the foresight not to build in the middle of the campus, but to have this green space. Mm. And so the beautiful buildings were built around it. So we used to park tailgate in this area. So when the rainstorms came and they had to close the Grove, people just kind of picked up their food and blankets and whatever and made spots there. And all of a sudden we had so much more room and the kids could run and throw the football. And so over time, this tradition of setting up tents grew, and it was a way to claim your space since you couldn't put your car there. And so we have about 20 families that we have bonded together, and we have two big tents, and we take turns kind of setting things up, and we have it catered. And I think the New York Times call it the mother of all tailgating experiences is the Grove. And it's a bucket list for people literally all over the world. We've had visitors from so many different countries that just want to come see this American phenomena. And it's a tradition that dates way back, but it got changed over time. And, and now it's evolved so much better than it ever has. So you got about 100,000 people that are coming and setting up their tents. And they do sit around the football games, but probably about a third of the folks don't even go to the games and just, just come for the Grove experience.
Right. Well, you said it a couple of times, Lee, and the word I love is tradition. And it all revolves around community. It revolves around family. Yeah. And I just love that. But, tradition doesn't happen, does it, without intentionality. You have to be intentional about those things.
And you have to be committed to it.
You do.
It really is the great thing about it is any of these events, we'll have four generations doing this together. So my parents, thank God, are still living. They're in their late 80s. And then our grandchildren are 1, 2, 4, and 5. And they enjoy it just as much as the 80-year-olds and everybody in between. So we're just so fortunate. When I was growing up, my father's family is Jewish and my mother's family is Christian. And so we did not worship together. But we did have that commonality of the Ole Miss traditions that we all did together. So it was the glue that brought our family together and still does. And
right.
So it was an extra special blessing for me to be able to have that.
Oh, that's just wonderful. I love that. Well, let's get into a little bit of your career journey, because I know that you have a law degree, but you didn't do that for very long. Can you just talk to us about after you graduated? I mean, what has your career journey looked like?
Sure. Well, my father was a banker, and so we specialized, I guess, in banking law and thought that that would be my career path. And I was graciously extended a job offer by our state's largest bank and after I finished law school. And I lasted about 9 months in that career. they were fantastic to me, but it just took me just a few weeks to find out I was really not a corporate guy and that banks are very, very traditional. And, you do things like they did last year and the year before and the year before. And I had a few ideas that I wanted to explore that probably if I'd stayed there another 20 years, I might could have done that. But I'm just too out of the box for that. And so had an offer to help write a prospectus for a growing real estate syndication investment firm. And so used my legal training to do that. And just a few months into that, saw that the sales guys were making more than I was as an attorney. And so I asked if I could do some selling, and I was good at it. And so I ended up going down that path in addition to my legal work. And a few years later, a friend of mine and I had the opportunity to buy our firm and built it into, I guess, a medium-sized company that part of it was bought out by a firm in Chicago in 1999, and enjoyed 10 years of relationship with that firm and met people from all over the country and had some great experiences. But 2009 brought a lot of changes into our business world across the country. And we had some failures, and so we decided to buy our division back.
You bought it back.
Bought it
right.
back. And at the time, that just sounded like a wonderful idea, but... to be honest, it didn't work, and it was not the company that
the
we
timing.
Had had. The timing was really, really bad.
Right, and right. So,
and it was a time, it was in the securities industry, and I was on the board of the National Association of Security Dealers, and then FINRA, our district board, and kind of like Paul, I guess, would say, I was a Hebrew of Hebrews, but the regulatory environment grew such that you had to have as many regulators as you did those that were on the sales force, and it made it very, very difficult, if not impossible, for small broker-dealer firms to exist. Mm-hmm. And so they either merged into others or closed. Very few of them survived, and we were one of the ones that did not survive.
Right.
And got into some regulatory issues, and it just was...
Lee, that had to have been really hard.
It was...
Yeah, that was,
it was
a
the
hard
hardest
time.
Season of my life.
Okay.
And, you know, there was a lot of pruning. I had had our company in various forms for 30 years and thought that would be something I would pass on to future generations. And it was my baby. And it was a very, very difficult time of pruning.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were some of the lessons that you learned during that time? I mean, sometimes, I mean, they're not fun. You just said the word pruning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a cutting away, and that is not fun. But sometimes I do believe that those times in our life are some of the greatest growth that we can have.
It was the most painful, but it was the time of greatest growth. You're right. And that what I would offer to those that are going through seasons of pruning would be patience. Would be to rely on a creator who does understand and have the whole picture in ways that we do not have.
Right.
God had something much better for me. I could not see it at the time.
Right.
Some days I would believe and trust that he did, and other days it's like, where are you?
Have you forgotten me?
Yeah, yeah. It was right. a hard time. It was a season of change. I'm a real committed person. You use the word tradition, and I would have stuck with that company for the rest of my life and lost, you know, everything that we had and been miserable,
mm-hmm.
but I would have stuck with it to keep trying.
Right.
So God knew that about me, so mm-hmm. he removed my ability to hold on to it, took it away because he did have something better for
mm-hmm.
me. And I'm...
So what was that something better?
Well, at first I didn't know. I actually had a notebook that I was involved with a racial reconciliation ministry called Mission Mississippi, and we were celebrating 20 years, and we were having a board meeting and trying to decide what to do and how to celebrate it. And one board member said, well, we have 82 counties in Mississippi. We ought to go to all 82 counties and have a celebration. And I kind of looked at this guy and I went, yeah, and who is going to plan and pay for that? You know, I thought that was the craziest thing I ever heard.
Right.
And I felt a sledgehammer, I think it was called a divine sledgehammer, that just hit me over the head and said, you know, I'm God, I can do anything I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we kept talking about it, the board got very excited about it and agreed that we would have to have somebody that could organize this. And they all started looking at me, and I went, are you kidding? You know. And so that was just about the time that God was shutting down my company. And so he very, I won't say gently, very aggressively informed me that that was what he wanted me to do for the next year. And it was a one-year commitment. And so it's very dangerous, probably very untheological to bargain with God, but I must admit that I did. And I said, okay, God, I'll do this, reluctantly. I'll do this for a year, but during that year, I want you to show me what I'm supposed to do the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one where the word retirement doesn't fit very
not
well
even
into
in
my
your
lifestyle.
Vocabulary.
And I'm sure you've heard that my wife and I are married for better, for worse, but not for lunch. And, you know, so she wanted me to find something to do as well.
Sure.
So I had a notebook of different ideas that friends would suggest and things that I felt like I should consider. And as the months rolled on, it just wasn't anything that I got real excited about. And we were in Atlanta one day, and my wife's an artist, and she was working with a gallery there, and I kind of got tired of hearing about, I love her work and I love listening to her working with galleries, but it just had gotten kind of old. And so she suggested, I'll put those in quotation marks, that I go visit with my friends at Wellspring. They had done an incredible job with our family over the years. And so she kind of wanted to get me out of her hair for a minute. So I went and talked to some friends of mine that had done some great work for our family, and just to be there and to visit with them. And during the course of conversation, I asked how business was for them, and the comment was made, well, we had our first potential down year, I guess, in 30 years, and I asked why, and they had an incredible gentleman that was their business development guy who had gotten cancer and then eventually had passed away, and it was they had spent a long time trying to find him again.
Right,
and,
to replace
and,
him.
Yeah,
right.
And it was a difficult. He was mm-hmm. such a dynamic person, had done a great job for him. And they really just had not been able to find that replacement. And in the course of conversation that I'm certainly not him, but do have some of the personality traits that he had. And
sure.
they pointed that out and said, you know, is this something you possibly would consider? And I said, well, I can't move to Atlanta. You know, my roots mm-hmm. are too deep in Mississippi. And that was kind of the end of that conversation. You know, several months later, the head of the firm, Greg Raby, was in Jackson, Mississippi, and was working with another client family and asked for us to have lunch, and we just started talking about it further. And he said, well, there may be a way that we could figure this out, that you could be in Atlanta on a monthly basis, and we'll just have to negotiate on how many days that would look like mm-hmm. and do this and still live in Mississippi. And mm-hmm. so we talked about it several more months, and I mentioned my wife's an artist, and she says, now, if I got a canvas and I painted your passions and your abilities and what that would look like, it would come out to be a painting of the job that you do now with Wellspring. I'd have the privilege of talking with families that the Lord has blessed in significant ways and helping them map out how that gets transferred to the next generation and working with a firm that arguably is the best in the country at helping families through this. And my job is to introduce the possibilities and then to turn it over to much smarter folks to work out the details.
So, well, I want to talk about that a little bit more, but we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with Lee Paris.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities.
So, Lee, you and I are connected. We originally met through an organization called YPO, stands for Young Presence Organization. Can you talk a little bit about YPO and what YPO is all about?
Well, it was originally started, I think, in 1950 in New York by a gentleman who whose father had a rather large manufacturing company, and he died unexpectedly and left this company to his son, who I believe was around 30, 31 years old. And he didn't, you know what to do.
Right.
And so he was able to connect with some other guys who had gone through similar situations. And so they were young, and they were all of a sudden president of these organizations. So therefore, the name YPO, or Young mm-hmm. Presidents Organization, came about. And this was in New York, and I think they got a group in Chicago together to do the same thing. And now it's worldwide. I think there are 24,000 members, and you have to join the organization before you're 44 years old, and you have to be president or chairman of your particular company. It has to be a certain size and a certain number of employees, but it is an organization where young presidents can learn from each other and build relationship and study and sort this out. Through the years, YPO has grown, and there are regional chapters, but now there are 60-some-odd networks to where you meet people alongside a common area There's golf and tennis and banking and wine.
And deals.
And we have a network called the Christian Fellowship Network, where people that share a similar faith journey or want to share that journey can join. And we have approximately 900 members.
Yes,
from across the world, literally almost every country in the world. And so it's an opportunity to join people of different regions and get to know each other.
All over the world, really.
Through commonality.
A member from South Africa, from Cape Town here,
here with us this week. Yeah,
yes.
We've got a lot of members in South Africa, and one of them's with us this week. So
right.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Very exciting. So, I mean, you weren't the only one, but you were kind of a founding father of the Christian Fellowship Network,
folks. There was a group called the Fellowship Forum before I came along that got together once a year, and some just real leaders within YPO that were Christians, and they had a gathering that my wife and I found out about and joined in Miami many, many years ago. And it was an incredible time, and that was before networks existed. But in a way, this fellowship forum was acting like a network within YPO before there were networks.
Right.
And so when the board of YPO International decided that the concept of networks was going to be introduced, Randy Hatcher from Augusta, Georgia, and I went to Toronto, where the meeting was taking place, and we submitted to the board to allow what the Fellowship Forum group had already been meeting and acting like a network, and petitioned the board that we could become a network. It wasn't well received at first because the narrow scope of being a Christian. I pointed out to the board that I was half Jewish and would be glad to help start a Jewish network as well.
Yes.
And we pointed out some other organizations that they had approved that were limited to, you know, for instance, golf. I mean, I don't play golf, but yet I shouldn't be offended that there's a golf network.
Right.
You know, I play tennis,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so
yeah.
now there's a tennis network as well. So anyway, we agreed that there were Christian focus was not going to be something everybody in YPO would be excited about,
right.
but that there was already a group within YPO that had been acting like a Christian network. And so eventually, after a few pleas, the board did approve the Christian Fellowship Network. And that was, I guess, 10 or 12 years ago. And we have grown to, we're getting close to 1,000 members now. And have incredible programs and abilities mm-hmm. for us to get together and to, I think, benefit the world and grow individually as families mm-hmm. and as believers. And it's just one of the greatest benefits of my life is to be a part of the Christian
Some
Fellowship
of your best
network.
Friends, wouldn't you say, Lee?
Absolutely. One of them sitting across
network.
The table. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And thinking about what you just told me, there's a few things that pop into my mind. For one thing, you guys were kind of pioneers. I mean, you were starting a network before there were really official networks.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also, the word that really comes to mind is resilience. So it wasn't necessarily easy, but you guys were resilient and you kept, you know, going back to the well and making your plea.
I would say, yeah, certainly the word resilient, but committed.
Committed.
We were committed to this vision, and we did have trouble. We had trouble getting it established, and we had trouble in the early years creating enough momentum. You know, for instance, the Deal Network, I think, has 4,000 mm-hmm. members, and then Golf Network and Wine Network that created just tremendous excitement immediately, and hundreds and hundreds, eventually thousands, you know, signed up. We didn't have that kind of initial excitement.
Right.
Ours was a slower growth and took a long time to really establish who we were, what we were trying to accomplish.
Right.
And so there were some, even after we were approved to be a network, there was a good bit of suggestions that we become something else or not
mm-hmm.
continue at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that even within our own network, just finding the right kind of leadership and commitment from others, it was slow getting started.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you stuck with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's just a good, if you feel really in your heart of hearts that you're supposed to do something. You know, it's that commitment, it's that not giving up, and I think those are just great lessons for anybody, not just what we're talking about right now, but if you feel in your heart that you are supposed to do something and you feel like that's what you're supposed to do, you need to be committed to it and don't give up.
This world fights that. You know, I think of business, I think of marriage.
Yes.
I think in years past that once you got married, you were married and you stuck it out. And in today's world, that is not always the case. And there's some reasons that marriages have to end, sadly.
Sure.
But I think so many marriages end that didn't have to end, and mm-hmm. that it was just a lack of commitment.
Is that your something extra, Lee? Is your something extra that every leader
maybe
needs?
Maybe so.
Is that commitment?
I don't. My wife maybe call it stubborn, but I do. Once I commit to something, I really do. With all my being, try to stick with it and make it to what it could be in my commitment, sometimes to my detriment. But mm-hmm. I think the vast majority of times that sticking with something is of great value. I've tried
right.
to teach that to my children, certainly in marriage. When my wife and I got married, we established that we were entering into a house that there was no back door. And that, you know, there was only one entrance and there was no way out, and that we couldn't promise each other that we'd be lovey-dovey all day long, 24 hours a day, but that we would stay together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's in any marriage, we've been married 38 years, there are days that you don't want to stay together.
That's right.
But if you're committed to something, you work it out.
The commitment.
In
right.
business, I think too many, particularly young people in today's world, just change, and that they could have been a lot more successful if they would just stick it out. And you see that in business time and time again, is that those who are successful, they have been through dark days. They have been through days that they had every excuse to bail and to go do something else. But the ones that were really successful just stick to it and
mm-hmm.
committed to it. And so, yeah,
mm-hmm.
if there was a message that I could encourage leaders to, if God's called you into something, stick to it. Be committed.
Right. No, I do love that. And to your point, it's not always easy. It doesn't mean, and sometimes that's when the old adage, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. It's really important just to, in anything, you know, whatever you're going through, you know, just to be committed. And it's very important to have support in those
yeah.
times too,
yeah.
right? Because there are days you want to give up
yeah.
in business or, you know, things are not going well. But how many times, Lee, have you seen it where you just continue to commit and continue to stick to it, and then just around the corner, there is a breakthrough.
And a
right?
lot of times your tires are just out and you can't go on. But that is, you brought up just being in fellowship, in relationship
support.
With other people, to support. And one thing that I have gotten so much out of it through our Christian Fellowship Network is the fellowship, and
yes.
and how so many days that I have been wanting to give up, and my brothers picked me up and carried me that mile, and prayerfully, hopefully, I've done that for others as well. Is that because life can be days that our wheels are stuck in the mud,
right?
And it's raining and it's cold and the car's not working and we're stuck
mm-hmm.
out in it, and yet if somebody comes along to help us get out of the mud, to give us an extra push or to carry us to where we need to go. And if we're willing to do that, then the journey is just so much more successful for all
Absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely. Well, you just brought up a good point, and I could not agree with you more. I think that is so crucial. So I want to talk about this real quickly. If there is somebody in the listening audience right now, and they say, I think I need this quarterback person in mm. my life to look mm. at all the things that we're trying to do, the legacy that we're trying to leave with our finances, with our treasure, how would they go about contacting you?
Well, I'd be honored to talk with any of your listeners. And, you know, we do work with family offices and high net worth families and helping them navigate through those tough decisions. And would be glad to have any of those reach out to me that we feel like it could be a benefit. My email address is lparis, P-A-R-I-S, at wellspringassociates.com. So would love to hear from those that might want to reach out.
Absolutely. Well, Lee, thank you so much for this time. This has been my pleasure to be with you today, and thank you for making the time to do this.
It's been an honor to be with you, Lisa.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.